When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Drake, can you talk about how, like, good Steph was against the type of defense they were playing and when it kind of clicked for him?
I thought he was incredible, and most importantly, his decision-making was great. He got off the ball. He didn't drive into traffic. He took what the defense gave him. I think for the first probably 6 minutes of that game or so, he had 0 points. Wasn't forcing anything, let the game come to him, and you know, we all followed that.
7 for 3 and 2 for 9 from two.
Curry working against Horford, took his ankles. Not ready to give him back either.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh. This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite Athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Welcome to the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. We've got Trevon Edwards. We've got James Edwards III. We've got Jared Weiss. We've got no J. King. He's traveling. It's weird. Jared's traveling, but yet he can do the podcast, but no J. King. Coward. And Mo Dakhil also traveling today, going to Boston. Coward. But everybody else in for the show, and we got a good one for you as the Golden State Warriors. They uglied it up. They went 107-88 to take game two, to get the split, to go to Boston, to save themselves the embarrassment of being down 0-2. And it wasn't particularly close. We had a close first half. And then, as the Warriors do, they just dominated the third quarter. Steph Curry has a great game, only needs 32 minutes to drop 29 points. And the Warriors were just overwhelming in this one. And so a stat I heard from, I think it was Tom Haberstroh of Levitard Show. Tom said that through two games, and Jared, maybe you can confirm this for me. Through two games, the Boston Celtics have 14 shots at the rim, which is insane to me. Like, I know that they were hot from three in the first game, so like you're gonna do that. And the Warriors defense has been good, and they've thrown a lot of zone at there, which can take away shots at the rim and everything. But 14 through two games for a team that's got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Robert Williams III, like, that almost seems made up. I'm just going to say Tom made it up, and then we can just dissect why Tom would make up such a statistic.
I mean, we know Tom makes everything up, right? So this isn't a surprise. I would say the one thing that's a little misleading, or I shouldn't say misleading, but the one thing that's different than what you would expect there is that they took 14 shots in like the short mid-range area.
Yeah.
So it's really that a lot of the shots that would be at the rim are just shots that they're pulling up from a little bit further out. You know, all those like Tatum leading floater kind of things, Jaylen Brown putting up floaters off the glass over a defender that just hits the top of the backboard, basically. Like, those are their kind of shots at the rim. Just Golden State is so good with the way that they rotate around the rim that the Celtics aren't getting wide open layups that often.
James, like, I've been impressed, because I thought the Warriors defense was pretty good in game one, just the strategy of it, the scheme of it, as they, you know, they made Jaylen Brown look really bad until the fourth quarter. They made Jason Tatum look really bad as a scorer. But also he kind of just missed some shots at times in game one. And then they turned him into a passer. And I thought they made him make the passes that they wanted. It's just Horford, Smart, and Derek White all bombed on him from three. And then that didn't really happen in game two. Game two, they just clamped down, and it was just classic. Like, when the Warriors smell blood, like, they are just relentless in how they swarm you. And I couldn't tell, because I started rewatching the game at one point last night, because I was trying to figure out, did the Warriors like make the Celtics so sloppy on, you know, with the ball, or were the Celtics just kind of doing that Warriors shit where they're sloppy with the ball, like, careless for no reason?
That's what I was trying to figure out. To go back to your point, I do think the strategy to go into this series was smart from Golden State. It just backfired by those guys you named hitting threes. Like, how many did they finish with those three combined in game
15 of 23.
So, like, even if they go 10 of 23, which is a great percentage for all three of them, the Warriors win the game. So
probably, yeah.
The idea was right. This time, they mucked it up. And Boston does have a tendency to turn the ball over. I thought they were obviously good with it in game one, specifically Tatum, but they do have a tendency to turn the ball over like the Warriors. And I think the Warriors just mucked the game up. And I know this is like the Draymond antics. Some people are like, it's just so corny. Like, there's no way it impacts. But like, I do think Draymond's just dickheadness to start the game mucked up the game and made it weird. And I thought the Warriors naturally were just a little more aggressive. They didn't give guys space. Like, I can't think of anybody. Derek White in the first half had a couple not really contested threes, but other than that, everybody else took kind of tough shots.
Yeah, man, it's so tough because like I feel like we're the problem with Steph, not us specifically, but just the collective, right? Where Steph has these games, and Steph has these games in the finals that are like really good. But something else happens and we focus on that, right? So I do want to talk about how good Steph has been through the first two games. And yet, you mentioned Draymond last night. Draymond last night is, I mean, he isn't pushing the envelope. He is grabbing the envelope and throwing it against whatever line it can't go to, right? Like, just throw it, like, whatever he's doing. And so
he's doing like second day delivery.
Yeah. So Trey, like, the Draymond antics, like, we'll call them antics. You know, he even mentions it last. He's like, I've earned, you know, different treatment than everybody else. Like, I'm proud of that. And everyone knew. I mean, Def Van Gundy's openly talking about it on the game call. Like, he gets that first tech, and then he's basically daring him, like, look, I'm going to do all this other shit now because they're not going to throw me out.
The two guys are going after each other. Jeff, I think you hit the nail on the head, and Mark, too, Mark Jackson, you hit the nail on the head where you have to consider one player has definitely a technical foul. Is this enough to call a double T and eject the one player? Personally, I would say nothing, and I would just let it diffuse as that. That's just my opinion.
Well, Steve, my question to you is, as a referee over there in the huddle, are you thinking about the fact that Draymond has one technical already?
Absolutely. I think that's part of good officiating is the fact that you have to know who has the technical fouls. And in this situation, one of the players does. Is this enough to warrant an ejection is what you have to think about.
I dare these guys. I dare Tony Brothers. I dare Zach Zarb. I dare these guys to throw me out of the game. And so, Trey, like, I mean, Draymond is kind of an evil genius in that respect.
I mean, he knows what he can get away with. He's been here before. He knows the refs. He knows how to get into players' heads. He's going to keep trying his spots. And, you know, he's getting physical with Jaylen Brown. He's getting physical with Grant Williams. He's just trying to basically be that bully. And it worked. It worked. You know, he knew he had some mental lapse in game one where he didn't respect Al Horford. They went back, looked at the film, made adjustments, took out Marcus Smart and Horford, and were able to, you know, like, they pounced on him. And then they had the infamous Warriors third quarter and just got it going, man. So, like, it's hilarious to watch. It's almost one of the funniest sights to see because he's just doing anything. There's a clip out there on the internet right now where he looks like an offensive tackle or a center, and he's just kind of clearing a way out, and it's clearly a moving screen, and Steph is just able to shoot and get that vision of what he wants. And then you got other plays where he's just tangled up with guys. He's defending a three and falling over and putting his feet on people and just trying to be as pesky as possible. I call it the Rodman strategy.
His feet on Jaylen Brown. Yeah. No, it's very Rodman-esque. Like, I just looked it up. You get a warning when you amass five technical fouls in a playoffs. Like, who gives a shit about a warning? Like, that's not gonna do anything. But if you
tell me when I get fined.
Yeah, if you get seven techs in a playoff, you get a one-game suspension. So I think he's at four. Maybe I need to relook that. He's either
that
at four
right.
or five. Maybe he's going to get the warning here. But yeah, Jared, like, from the Celtics standpoint, I know Jaylen Brown had some interesting comments after the game about the Draymond stuff, but do you feel like they got tricked last night?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they spent the entire post game session talking about how Draymond was on his bullshit, and it was great because it was what was so funny about it was I think it was like Derek White, who's like this very sweet, straightforward, honest guy. He came out there like, yeah, Draymond did his thing, and you know, we just got to deal with it. While Jalen's like, Draymond did his thing, and I'm really tired of this shit. And it was great because he started talking about how like Draymond pulled on his shorts, and he's like, I don't know what that's about. When like it was obvious Draymond pulled on his shorts because he was trying to get up so he could just yell at Jalen's face. So
right,
you know, Jalen is very petty. He's very good at being petty. He spent half of the presser just talking about the refs and complaining about the calls and all that kind of stuff. But Draymond very clearly got into their heads, and they all pretty much admitted it, and they knew this was going to happen at some point. But the thing that I think made Draymond so important in this game isn't just the psych out part, but he had 8 deflections and yeah. Steph had 7 deflections. Like those two right there almost had as many deflections as the whole Celtics team. My favorite part, I actually wrote about this in my story after the game, that Draymond lead block screen was, I thought, brilliant, because Draymond sets the condition for the whole game that he could literally just have a play where he shoves 3 guys under his screen and the refs aren't going to call it, which is like, it was so obvious. But honestly, when it was happening, I didn't think anything of it. So I'm like, I don't know, that's what Draymond's going to do. He's going to do it. And he ended up with 3 screen assists, the Rudy Gobert MVP of the game. Wow,
Jazz are going to be mad at that. More on the Jazz later. Tune in. It's so funny. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because so I get so annoyed when fans complain about moving screens against their team, right?
Yeah.
Because everyone does it. Everyone's been doing it since, like, Kevin Garnett kind of mastered this thing, you know, a decade and a half ago. As the league decided, like, yeah, you can do it. It's fine. Like, we're gonna turn away from it, and you can just do it. Just don't like outright shove people, right? So when a Celtics fan is like, oh my god, these Draymond Green moving screens, I'm like, how do you feel about the Al Horford ones? And then last night Draymond is shoving people, and I'm like, okay, there is probably a line where
I actually wrote a story on that earlier this year. Isaiah Stewart does it in Detroit. The Pistons call it highway screen. Steven Adams, if you guys just like go watch,
oh my god,
how many lanes he opened up for Morant, just
he's fucking being the
lead blocker.
Like he is a sheepdog. Like just
yeah, that's all them. It is. I think the league in the regular season, they picked up on it a little bit more, but now they're not calling it at this stage. No way.
They're not going to call it in this one. Steph, you know,
on Shepard.
you mentioned Steph, the deflections. I think Steph has been amazing defensively.
So good.
And he's been like, he was a legitimately. Yeah, exactly. He's been, yes, sir. Trey, he's been a legitimately good defender this year. It used to be like, oh, you know, he competes, but he's just not like, he was a good defender this year. He was really able to be a part of that defense. And I honestly wonder if, all right, we got to play a lot with Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole's a bad defender. Maybe I've got to just be better at this. And maybe that's a reason that he didn't shoot the way that he normally does, because he was better and gave more effort defensively.
I don't think he was like really, really bad. I think the expectations we had for him were really high. Well, you know what I mean?
He's just small, right? Like there's a certain point where like even last night, I'm watching Gary Payton II, who's a great defender, and there are certain points where I'm just like, he's 8 inches shorter than Jason Tatum.
There's only so much
you can do. Yeah.
And I think teams hunt him. So they obviously have been hunting him his whole career. So he's usually matched up on the best player, which is hard for anybody to stop to. I think it does get overlooked.
Yeah, as good as Steph was offensively last night, I thought he was equally as good defensively, Trey. And Steph's just been fantastic. Other than the second quarter of game one, he's been so fucking good in this series so far. And obviously, you know, we're going to have the MVP, finals MVP conversation with him if the Warriors win this thing. But I just, man, I can't believe how good Steph has been on both sides of the ball through the first two games.
Yeah, I think I called it goalie defense, but I think his awareness is just there. He's playing the whole bait thing where he kind of looks off as if he's a cornerback and like he's not there, and he's reading everything. If it's a pass that he may not physically be able to body up or, you know, kind of turn a guy, but if he can bait him into the pass, he's jumping in that lane and stealing it.
Yeah.
And or deflecting the ball and creating another break to go to the other end. And he's been so good with that on rotating, running those type of schemes. It's almost like watching the Seattle Seahawks with Richard Sherman hiding him, you know what I mean? And, well, and putting him in that type of zone.
And I think part of that too, Trey, is that he knows, like, all right, I got Looney and I got Draymond behind me, right? Like, so if I gamble here and I miss, I at least know that they're going to pick me up, because Looney's been so good. And then Draymond's obviously Draymond, but yeah, like I think Steph has just been, competing so well. Like even in game one, he had a bunch of times where they hunted the switch for him to guard Tatum, and he was able to do this because the Warriors defense was, you know, kind of designed to make him pass, but he didn't get torched in those situations. He competed. He got for the most part, he got the pass that they wanted. And then the Celtics knocked down shots that just didn't happen last night, 'cause they were so sloppy with the ball. But let's go to the third quarter collapse. Once again, Jared, what's so weird about this is the Celtics were the best third quarter team in basketball this year. And it wasn't close. Like, I think their net rating was 11.8. The Warriors were second with like a 10.5. But that's a huge gap between those two. And the Celtics look like the Kings in the third quarter through these first two games. Like, they've just been obliterated. And last night, it was funny because, like, in game one, we saw the Celtics like kind of get a little bit of momentum back towards the end of the third, and then obviously the first few minutes of the fourth quarter, they just jumped all over the Warriors and eliminated that on their way to that crazy quarter. But last night, the Warriors got it to a similar place, and then at the end of the quarter, just like pedal to the metal, right? Like just completely accelerated. And then obviously Jordan Poole hits that half-court shot to really punctuate it. But Jared, like, what has happened to the Celtics in these third quarters?
It's funny you mentioned the Kings because Vivek was at the game last night. So,
yo, who was he
maybe
with?
Maybe they're just auditioning for their future employer.
His daughter?
Was that his daughter?
Really? I saw on Twitter he was with his daughter. Yeah.
Okay. He did well.
So, the Celtics in the playoffs, I think that they're bad in the third quarter because they play a lot of good second quarters and they're just not allowed to be consistently good for multiple quarters.
Yeah,
that's just not how they do it. Yeah. They've talked so much about getting in their own way and all that kind of stuff. I don't understand how the Celtics are, you know, even in the NBA finals, considering how inconsistent they've been throughout the playoffs, but they're great while they're great. And their defense is pretty consistently good while their offense goes through its ups and downs. But for me, the big thing, this is what my story really focused on after the game, was that they just hit this offensive stagnation where they're defending fine, but they just go through these lulls where not only are they not creating good looks, but like they're just settling for bad looks that creates frustration and that seeps into their defensive effort a little bit. And that's when they start to lose a little bit of that ball pressure, a little bit of the snappiness of their rotations. And that's what allows Steph to just kind of have a couple quick hitters, and it's Steph. So it's like with him, he just needs to come down the floor. And if you're just not quite engaged, right, he's just going to step right into a three. And that's how it was just kind of like, bam, bam, like two of those right in a row. That gets the run going. Then Jordan Poole, they switch to him once the Celtics start trying to throw size at him, and Poole's able to get by everybody, or he just hits a couple insane shots at the end. But it's like, I think just the Warriors are a little bit different than the teams they faced before. Well, the teams they were facing before, you had to get their star to basically not collapse your entire defense. So it was all about just kind of staying loaded up and ready for those driving kicks. While with the Warriors, it's like you just kind of like let down for a second. You're just not completely locked in for a second. They just start hitting you with these early offense threes that buries you really quickly.
Yeah, James, in game one, the fourth quarter stat that blew me away was the Celtics hit 9 threes in the quarter and the Warriors had 7 made shots as a team, right? Like that, like that's how lopsided it was. And then in the third quarter of game two, the Celtics had 14 points and made 4 shots. Steph Curry had 14 points and made 4 shots. Like that, it was just so dominant.
This series so far has been weird with just the swings and the individual brilliance. Even Tatum in that first half was so good.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about, what would he finish with, 5 threes, 6 threes?
Yeah, I think 6.
It's just, there's been moments of just individual brilliance, which is what we hope to expect from a series like this with so many, all NBA caliber guys. And I think that's just natural in today's NBA with the three ball and, in having this type of talent, there are going to be significant kind of lopsided differentials or odd stats like the ones you just pointed out. It's honestly been kind of fun. I enjoy it.
What happened to Al Horford in game two?
I definitely think that the Celtics, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier. I don't know if the Warriors mucked up the game to the point that the Celtics kind of reverted to that kind of ISO ball that they can kind of get to at times, or if they just naturally reverted to that anyway. But I do think there wasn't as much ball movement. I do think whenever Horford did touch the ball on the perimeter that there was somebody in him. I think they adjusted to guarding him. I haven't gone back and watched, but it felt that way. And then when he did get the ball, I thought he forced some stuff. Like we were talking about Steph's defense. I remember Horford trying to post up Steph.
Yeah. And he had one against Clay too, like that, where he was like really trying to get in there.
Yeah. I just thought he was pushing the issue, probably out of frustration, but I definitely don't think the Celtics moved the ball as well as they did in game one. I definitely did. Yeah. I know they had a lot of assists, but it didn't feel like the ball was moving well.
It felt like the first few minutes of the game, they were moving the ball, and then it just completely went away.
Agreed. Just a big part of their third quarter collapse was they didn't even know what they were trying to do on these plays, it seemed like. And so they would force the ball into Horford with the mismatch, and he, for one, couldn't even get anywhere on the back downs. But then they weren't spacing around him to give him somewhere to move the ball. Like,
yeah, guys, someone just kind of lapped his whole time. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, they were doing that. Like, the Celtics kind of get into this bad habit where they will almost hide behind defenders, just like thinking, like, oh, maybe this will draw my defender further away, even though it doesn't really do that. Like, you need to go find that open space, even if it hurts the spacing around the guy with the ball, because, like, Horford can get the ball out of there. So you almost want the defense to think that they can go for the steal as long as it opens you up, so that way Horford can make the pass, because that's what Horford wants to do, because Horford only has one post move. It's to hit the guy with his shoulder three times and take that righty hook. It's the same shot every time for the last 15 years.
Trey, what do we make of Klay Thompson's struggles here? Because he's just missing some shots that he normally hits, but I also think he's forcing a lot of bad shots. We saw that against Memphis. We saw it a little bit at times against Dallas, but Klay just seems like he's maybe even his own head right now.
Dylan Brooks.
Wow.
Absolutely. I do think that he's in his own head. But again, it's been a 3-year hiatus. He wants to perform well on a high level. Yeah. So it's definitely in the back of his mind. But also, I'm not surprised, like, Klay's not taking, like, he's always been taking great shots. He just was able to make them because his confidence was high. But I think there's some sort of reality setting in where it's like, okay, not only injuries, but I'm getting older. So how do I find ways to be effective? And he had to do some playmaking stuff. And then he made a shot here and there. But like, again, the expectation of having him be that second fiddle to Steph is up in the air, you know?
Yeah.
And that right now is a big inconsistency for the Warriors, because number two could be anybody. It could be Jordan Poole. It can be Andrew Wiggins. It can be Draymond Green. And so forth. So I don't think that, you know, like, not to write him off or call him washed or anything like that. I think he just needs to take a step back and see what his new role is on this team and how can he be the best out there. You know what I mean? When he's out there, whether it's not making shots, whether it's just like again, even, you know, we watched in that Grizzly series, he was struggling to stay in front of like more athletic guys. And it's like, it's not that, you know, he's losing his way, but he may have to guard bigger guys. You know what I mean? Like, and just kind of adjust that weight. How kind of similar to Victor Oladipo. You know how Victor Oladipo is now considerably like going back to the Indiana Victor Oladipo, where it's like defensive instead of offensive, because he doesn't have that explosion to beat guys or do what he would normally do that made him an all-star. So still valuable to this team. And I think that he can continue to play as a high level. But it's interesting to move forward from this one.
They're still worried about the threat of Klay. So at least like his presence out there, you know, they're not leaving him.
Think about James Harden in that Bucks series when he was with the Nets with the hamstring and he was just out there. He was playing 30 plus minutes, but you have to respect it. And it's like, we can't sub someone else in We can't sub a Otto Porter in to mask Clay because he doesn't get the same gravity that Clay's gets. Like, right. You never know what Clay you're going to get. Clay might hit six threes, and then Clay might miss two layups in the next game. Yeah. And he's disappearing. So, like, at that point, you still have to respect because he's earned that as a, you know, as a guy that has been done well in this league.
Yeah. Also, I want to you mentioned Wig real quick. Like, Wig was playing good basketball last night, except when he had to finish shots. Yeah. But I thought like what a lot of what he was doing, like he was good, making good effort plays, and he had a few like offensive rebounds and stuff. And he's doing the stuff that kind of turned things around for him in the playoffs. But there were times where I was like, oh, poor Wig. Like he missed a layup. He tried to challenge like Al Horford or Robert Williams. And he gets like denied and everything. I'm like, man, you got like, cause he's kind of going in clearly worried about their rim protection ability. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he's like kind of going in software. I'm like, man, you gotta go baptize somebody.
Yeah.
Like you just gotta go do it. Maybe he's tired. Maybe he's, I don't know what's going on, but I thought he was making great plays until he had to finish the shot. And I was like, oh, poor Wig.
I've done a complete 180 on Wiggins. Like I love Andrew Wiggins now. And I agree. Like last night was kind of like that Wiggins is still there. But he's been so good this playoffs. I thought he was so good in game one. But I thought he, like you said, Zach, I thought he played well last night. It was just, it's clearly on his mind when he attacks.
Yeah.
I thought he settled for like a couple. I remember like a weird midi fadeaway that was weird. But I thought he played well. I thought he got into Tatum. I've just
great. Yeah.
Yeah. I've enjoyed the Andrew Wiggins experience significantly more than I anticipated for the last month and a half. Hey, kudos to Andrew Wiggins.
It takes a while to get that Timberwolves out of you. Let me just tell you, it takes a while. All right, before we move on to a couple other things around the league, let's just get a reassessment of what we feel about this series. Jared, how did you feel going into it, and have the first two games changed your mind at all?
I think the only thing that's just changed my mind is I didn't think the Celtics would get game one, so that just gives them a little bit of an upper hand here, because I had Warriors in seven originally. You know, I kind of was feeling we're Celtics in seven after them taking game one. Now I'm back to Warriors in seven because I changed my mind after every single time a team wins. But the main thing is that the Warriors have been better throughout throughout the eight quarters in totality. I think the only major question I have here is like, if the Celtics hadn't let it just fall out completely at the end of the third quarter, could they have mounted another fourth quarter comeback to at least make it look competitive? Because they just did not look competitive in that game. And I'm pretty sure they could have, but that's been the thing with the Celtics is especially in these third quarters, they could keep it to a 10-point game like they did in the first game, but they don't. They just let it completely slip because their offense just goes stagnant for too long. And they're playing a lot of Peyton Pritchard and Daniel Tice. And that's a problem. Rob Williams doesn't seem like he can play more than 20 minutes right now. And I don't know if that's going to get better. If that doesn't get better, you know, those were the kind of concerns I had coming into the series about why, even though the Celtics maybe are better on paper, they just don't seem to have the health right now to be able to keep up with the Warriors.
Yeah, Robert Williams III is just, man, I feel so bad for him because he's trying to gut through this thing. But you can tell, like, I mean, his knees.
And he had to do land on his leg again.
Yeah.
It's crazy how this keeps happening to him.
Somebody rolled into it. Yeah, man, that looked painful. He tried to stay in the game. And I think he maybe even got a block or he got a deflection or something right after. Like, he's trying to gut through that. Do you think that Draymond gets either ejected from a game in this series or suspended?
Oh, yes. Him in Boston? Come on, man. Ooh, no offense. I love there's a lot of people from Boston. Draymond, somebody's going to say something crazy to Draymond.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. And then on top
the
of
Boston
what's
is racist
on the
narratives
floor,
about to pop off.
Yeah. Like it's about to get crazy. Yes, Draymond will get. I'm going to say both. Wait, is he one T away from missing a game?
No, I think he's one T away from a warning.
Okay. Yes.
Three away from, I believe he has four in the playoffs right now. So he's
seven,
either
right?
Two or three. Yeah, seven is the, all right, you got to go. Also, I failed to mention, it's not just a one-game suspension. It's also a $5,000 fine. So be careful of that.
Oh, he can go make that doing an appearance, though.
Yeah.
the idea of warning Draymond Green is pretty hilarious. Too.
I love
like
that.
That means anything to him.
I hope it's an official letter. I hope it's an official letter that he's got to do.
He better read it on his pod.
James, what about you? How did you feel, and how do you feel at this point after two games?
So the journalist in me went into the series thinking Boston was the better team. The fan of basketball in me wanted the Warriors to get one more. I now think that the Warriors are the better team. And I think because Boston's, and Jared just talked about it, the stagnation Boston often carries and shows does worry me, especially as you get deeper into a series like this. And it's kind of your first time as these young guys, even Horford. I think that's going to show itself a little bit more. The Warriors are going to move offensively. They're going to make you, they're going to get easy buckets because of how they play basketball, whether or not Klay ever snaps out of it, whether Jordan Poole reverts back to how he kind of was in game one, whatever. The Warriors are going to manifest good shots. I think Boston, because of how they play offensively, there is going to be spells throughout this series where they just don't manifest good shots, and you just can't do that against the Warriors. So I was hoping that Boston would kind of have the ball movement that it showed in game one. Mm-hmm. And of course, the ball movement looks good when three guys are shooting a combined like 70% from three, but they moved the ball well. Tatum did a great job. I just think the stagnation is too prevalent in their fabric right now that it's going to overcome the stretches of excellence that the Warriors can put together.
Trey, what about you? How did you feel before the series, and has anything changed after two games?
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, man. I put out a hot take. I said Warriors in five, and when they lost that first game, listen, when they lost that first game, I was like, oh, Celtics fans are about to come for me.
They're about to
feel comfortable. I feel a little comfortable. I don't know if they went four straight, but like, I still like Warriors in six. But in respect to the Boston Celtics fans, this could go either way in six. You never know. But the Celtics don't play well at home, so I don't know.
We'll I was forced into a hot take prediction because Marcus Thompson and Jay King were being cowards on the podcast, on the POC podcast last week, and wouldn't make a prediction. Marcus made five predictions. He had Warriors in five and Celtics in six and Warriors in seven. Like he had five predictions. So I ended up saying Boston in five. I don't believe that, but someone had to say something on that podcast that was of substance, and so I did that. I still feel like Boston. It's complex. I feel like Boston's the better team. I feel like the Warriors are the smarter team, if that makes sense.
Maybe that's a better way to say what I was trying to say.
Yeah, and I think
a more composed team.
Yeah. I mean, I think knowing like. Trusting their strategy, tightening it up a little bit from game one to game two, I think it shows that I think a lot of teams could have panicked after, oh my God, we gave up 21 three-pointers. Like, we've got to change everything. And I thought that they were just very poised and like, let's not overreact. It's one game. Like, we'll be fine. Go for it.
As I say, the big difference that I think you see with these two teams is that Steph, he just has these possessions where he can keep dancing and just keep working for something no matter what the Celtics throw at him and eventually find that look. And Boston's guys just aren't able to quite stretch out those possessions in the same way.
Right.
And not to mention, they also waste a ton of time and then try to get into something late and then get to nothing. And Golden State's just so much better. Between him and Draymond, they're just able to make decisions early and just keep pushing that possession until they eventually find something in a way that pretty much no other team in the league can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was interesting game one or game two, the first quarter, first few minutes of that first quarter. Steph was just like not really involved. I mean, he was involved because he's Steph, but he wasn't really forcing the issue. And I thought that patience was pretty impressive. And then he ends up having a 10-point quarter anyway because he's fucking Steph Curry. So like he's just going to put up points. But I thought that was kind of emblematic of that, of what you just talked about, of just like they run their stuff and they know their guy's going to get stuff at a certain point. So I guess I feel like the Warriors are in a better position, even though they gave up game one at home, because of that intelligence. I think some of that finals experience shown through in game two to like respond the way they did. But I guess it'll depend on like how healthy Williams is, but I feel like Boston will respond in game three pretty well.
The Steph and Draymond shit talk in Boston is going to be Like, I cannot wait for those two in that crowd in the NBA Finals. It's going to be good. Fantastic.
You know, something that's interesting too, like, they left Jordan Poole out there in the fourth quarter to, like, kind of pad his stats a little bit and get a comfort and everything, because he still wasn't having that good of a game. He just wasn't having a disaster of a game like game one. Yeah. He looked like a neutral, and then he hits those, you know, he hits that shot at the end of the third. It's a 20-plus point game, and they, you know, Steph gets accused of front running. They let him front run. Right. But I think it's important because it got him into a rhythm. He ends up having, you know, 17 points in the game. I think he had 9 points in a fourth quarter that didn't matter. And I actually think that was a really smart move by Kerr, because, like, yo, he needs to feel some rhythm. He needs to feel some success here going into game three. I thought that was a really smart, like, just little thing to do at the end of the game to give him some confidence.
I wonder if that backfired. I was going to say that earlier. I wonder if that backfired, though, with Clay. Like, Clay couldn't buy a bucket with Sam Hauser on the floor and Aaron Nesmith. Like, I wonder if his confidence is even more sure.
I'm not fully convinced Sam Hauser's a real person.
The only reason I know he's real is his brother plays at Michigan State. So, like, that's the only reason I know.
I'm not convinced that this is a real person. He might be, like, an extra from One Tree Hill or something like that that they just let be on the team. There's a reference for you nobody will get.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
I mean, you know, Steph was breathtaking in that quarter. Not just the shot making, but the defensive effort. He just doesn't get enough credit for his level of conditioning, physicality, and defense.
Yeah, Al, what kind of impact do you think Draymond and some of the dust-ups he got in out there and just the physicality he was playing with had on you guys composure-wise, especially after a few of those altercations you guys had early in the game?
I mean, he's going to do what he does. We're not worried about him. You know, we're going to do what we do, focus on us, and we just didn't get it done tonight. We'll be better at home, game three.
Jeff, you think you hit the nail on the head, Mark, too, Mark Jackson, you hit the nail on the head where... you have to consider one player has definitely a technical foul. Is this enough to call a double team and eject the one player? Personally, I would say nothing, and I would just let it diffuse as that. That's just my opinion.
What happened in the third quarter, bro? I just need to know what happened in the third quarter, bro. I look felt halftime, down by one or up by one. I can't remember. But, like, the third quarter, I don't know what coach said. I don't know what happened.
All right, let's move on to the other big news from the NBA this week. Quinn Snyder quit. Quinn Snyder.
Good for him.
I actually think the timing of it was interesting because I think a lot of people thought he was going to get away from the Jazz and try to be the Lakers coach. And then after Darvin Ham gets named the Lakers coach, which I love that hire. I just wish they had a good team for him to coach. Then he steps away. And maybe that was actually part of the negotiations. He and the Jazz have been talking for a while about this, and maybe they were just like, we're not going to let you go to, like, go be the Lakers coach, yeah. Right? Maybe that was part of it. But Quinn, like, I mean, he had a great run there. I think he's the fourth longest tenured coach in Jazz history. I think he's the second winningest coach in Jazz history, obviously behind Jerry Sloan. He had a great run there. He turned them into a really good team, really good schemes and a lot of stuff. But, I mean, the playoff stuff was the playoff stuff, and now they're just going to hand over the keys to Donovan Mitchell because I think there is such a panic there with the All-Star game being in Salt Lake City next year. I do think there is such a panic to like have Donovan be the mayor of Salt Lake City and like feature him. And so like this idea that they're going to move him anytime. So they may have to move him at, you know, by in within the next year. It's not going to happen before All-Star weekend.
No, I forgot about that. That's a great point.
And so unless they're maybe just like absolutely blown away by an offer, but the Quinn Snyder stuff is interesting. And now you get a lot of CAA clients out there as rumors. I mean, Johnny Bryant is one. He's a Knicks assistant. He was on Quinn's staff for a long time. He's a great development guy. I can't remember the other names that we saw. I mean, Alex Jensen was, you know, lead assistant for Quinn. So maybe he gets it. Terry Stotts is someone I think a lot of people in Utah believe what might get the job. But Brad Stevens, maybe, you know, out of the front office. Let's say the Warriors wax the Celtics. He's just like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'll go to Utah.
Bring Danny Ainge back down.
Yeah, maybe Danny Ainge gets back on the bench. That always worked out. I mean, James, were you surprised? Well, not surprised. Like, are you surprised that it's now we get the quote of like Donovan Mitchell is worried about the direction after this? And he's like, nobody in the organization was shocked at this, and everyone saw it coming. I can't imagine Donovan didn't see it coming. If I knew it was going to happen, like Donovan has to have known it was going to happen.
Right.
But what did you make? What do you make of this whole Jazz situation?
I think Quinn Snyder looked at the situation and realized, and I don't think he just recently realized this, that a lot of the Jazz shortcomings is roster influenced, and there's just no avenue for them to. The best version of the Jazz has Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell on it, plus somebody else. And there's no way to get to somebody else. And so I just think that this roster is just, and it's kind of hit its peak, and something has to happen. And that something could be Rudy for young pieces or something that Quinn Snyder does not really want to sign up for or thinks that that can break through and get him to a different level in the playoffs. So I think and people have talked about this. I think Quinn waits and goes to San Antonio.
Yeah. I think that's the next.
I think that's makes the most sense.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Pop probably coaches this year. I think we would have heard he wasn't if that was the case.
Right.
And now, yeah, you wait a year. Pop maybe retires after next season, and then Quinn takes over. And I think the Spurs would be very comfortable with that. Trey, in terms of what the Jazz do next, do you think it matters who the next head coach is? Or do you think like this stuff is heading towards an even messier breakup of the stars and everything?
First of all, shout out to Quinn Snyder taking his health seriously. Coaching the Jazz is like being the president of the United States.
It aged him, man. It really did.
Are we sure it was the Jazz?
Crazy. Hey, man. Whatever.
More wrinkles since last year.
Whatever it is, I seen a side by side of when he started, and then like
he was wearing a life vest at some of these pressers, right? Like
it was pretty crazy. But for the timing of the leak to say that Donovan was like shocked and, you know, like not happy about this decision. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, cue up the Miami Heat and New York Knicks photoshops now. But as far as finding a coach, I mean, hopefully they are able to bring in some new blood. I mean, I'm just with that around the league, though. I mean, you know, Kenny Atkinson could potentially be the Hornets coach and things of that nature. But like, I'm just ready for the league to get some new blood and see these new guys try different things. You know what I mean? Obviously Emay's had success and, you know, Darvin Ham's now in LA and more coaches off the bench, you know what I mean? Would be even better because, you know, they bring a different perspective, a new perspective on offense and how things and just trying new things and just kind of being disruptive in such an old league. So if I'm the Jazz, I'm not worried, but it's long overdue. I mean, it didn't work. They remind me of like that Clippers team that like we're almost there and just couldn't get over that hump. So fast forward to it, whoever they bring in, and if they decide to just keep Rudy, which I think is the safest move because he actually likes Utah, And it's hard to get guys to Utah. It's hard to get guys to Portland too. So it's interesting to say, like, Dame kind of throwing out that running from the grind situation. And then he's going to look up 2 years from now and, like, everybody's just doing their thing. And he's, you know, I don't think he has that leverage to kind of force himself out like that. So hopefully, you know, Donovan ends up in a spot that he wants to be in, and the Jazz kind of benefit from it.
Yeah, I am curious what the next step, because James, you make a great point of, like, they need those two and another guy, and just the way they're set up with the contracts, that there is no way to go get that other guy.
Yeah. And no assets. Like, who else on that team do you want?
Right, exactly. Like, no one's going to be, like, it's not that Conley's bad. It's just no one's going to pine to go get Conley. It's not that Bogdanovich is bad. It's just you're not going to do that. They're not going to trade Royce O'Neal because that's, like, Donovan's best friend, right? Yeah. Like, there are just a lot of weird things under Quinn that last, like, year or two with not being able to get those guys on the same page. I think Rudy Gay couldn't stand playing for him. There was just a lot of weird stuff in there that kind of helped poison the well. And, like, I do, like, look at him and at Quinn and say, like, yeah, you got out. Like, you probably got out a year too late, right? Yep. Like, they wanted to run it back one more time and be like, well, what if this did work? And then there's just so many problems. And some of that is his coaching. I don't want to blame all that on the player. Some of it was, like, he didn't adjust to things well. He wouldn't go small in playoff situations. Like, he's got to learn from some of that stuff. But he's still, like, he's a really good coach, and he'll be good in the next spot. There was a comment that I found hilarious. I learned of this yesterday. Where Josh Kroenke of the Denver Nuggets owner, he said, Tim Connelly leaves for a crazy deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? Like, unbelievable money and ownership stake, like, just a crazy deal. The Kroenkes have more money than God. So, like, the idea that they would, like, skimp out on, like, paying Tim Connelly to stay there is wild to me, but whatever. Like, they didn't want to keep him for that money, so he moves on. Calvin Booth gets named as the new general manager, and then Josh Kroenke comes out and says, we're entering a new phase of the organization, and with this squad in particular, which is, it's championship or bust. And this is the first time those words have been uttered around these halls, I think. We have a two-time MVP. We have two more all-star caliber players coming off injuries. I'd maybe push back on that, Josh, but whatever. This is how you feel. And I think we are poised in a way that perhaps this organization hasn't been in the past. And that excites me. But that brings a lot of pressure. We're no longer the underdog. That's kind of the lovable guys that are bouncing along from Denver, Colorado. I think that when we get healthy and show what we're capable of, we will have a target on our back. An owner coming out there and saying this is championship or bust time is wild to me for that
wild
team. Like, Jokic is obviously as good as anybody right now, right? Like, he's been just ridiculous the last few years. He's been the MVP the last 2 years. But, like, Jamal Murray coming off a knee injury, like, Jamal Murray's a good player, right? Uh-huh. Like, I don't know how to say he's all-star caliber. Michael Porter Jr. coming off, like, the back stuff that a lot of people, like, it's the reason he fell in the draft. The Sacramento Kings were going to take him second in that draft. Uh-huh. And then the medicals were so bad that they, like, even, like, Vlade was like, I can't do this. And he falls to the end of the lottery, but, like, he obviously is a super talent, but he had a bunch of health issues that worried people. Also, like, I don't know that he's all-star caliber. Like, he's a great scorer, but I mean he would have to change his game a lot, and also he'd have to be on the court to, like, change his game to that. And it's still a good team, but I know I was on an island on this, and I end up being correct because of injury, so it doesn't really count. When they traded for Aaron Gordon, everyone was like, oh my God, look out. I'm like, it's Aaron Gordon. What are we doing? Like, he's nice, but it's not like he's not going to pull that thing together. He's coming from the Magic. Like, that's not how that works. And so I think this is a crazy thing for an owner to say out loud.
Yes.
I think it's a crazy thing to say to Calvin Booth, let alone to then go on the record publicly and say.
I think it's dumb. Like, what's the point? Like, if it happens,
I don't know.
Like, if it happens, it happens. Great. But, like, now you're putting this expectation out there with a team that, if we're being honest, are we ever sure Michael Porter's going to get through a whole season? Are we ever sure Jamal Murray's going to get, like, even if you want to call them two all-star caliber players, which we all agree we would push back on, they're not going to be available. Like, Porter's, this is just going to be a thing. Like it is. It's unfortunate. There's something wrong with him physically. Like it is what it is. You might get 60 games out of him. You're not going to get 82 in a whole playoff series. It just makes no sense to do it. You're putting unrealistic expectations on a team that I have such a problem. This just all rooted back in I have such a problem with championship or bust talk in sports.
Yeah.
Like I can tell you, like my dad lives in Denver. I spent a lot of time in Denver. Nuggets fans are very much enjoy what they've been getting the last 3-4 years.
Yeah.
I would imagine Portland fans have enjoyed the experience since Dame has been there. The Raptors, I would imagine, even before the Kawhi stuff, like obviously they wanted to get over the hump. They were a very good team for a long time. Like not everybody wins a title, man. And there's no point in coming out and saying it and messing up feng shui and all that shit. Just play. I don't know. I have a whole issue with anybody saying that for teams that are consistently good. Like there are so many teams in this league that would love to be the Nuggets as is.
Yeah. Also, Trey, like Jokic is 27. Where is this window closing where you're like, well, it's championship or bust? He's 27. Unless you think he's going to retire to like go raise horses or something. Like, I don't understand, Trey, why why Josh Kroenke would come out here and say championship or bust for this Nuggets team.
That's what you want them to say, I feel. I mean, it's very, unless you're a lovable loser and you say, oh, we're just going to try to make the playoffs this year. You know what I mean? Or,
yeah,
like you know, you want to say that, right? And, you know, I had a conversation with the NBA player and he was talking about like how he was a part of an organization and they split up too soon. But like when they would be so close to reaching the finals, it was more so on the general manager quitting on that team too soon. You know what I mean? And how the NBA works, it's like, it's not your turn. So you're going to lose those type of games. You know what I'm saying? So in a particular time, like they have a unit together. Obviously injuries have come and gone and key role players have been missing, you know, and in this situation, it's tough to put that expectation, especially when you made the trade for Aaron Gordon and Aaron Gordon somehow, he needs to raise his IQ or, you know, trying to get Jamal Murray back to his, you know, get back to his, 100%. I think they have a good team. You know, they had Michael Porter Jr., Will Barton, you know, off and on. So there's definitely a window there, and it's more realistic with like a Utah, I guess, breaking up or Lakers getting older or Phoenix potentially losing DeAndre Ayton to Detroit. You know what I mean? Like those things can happen that way and their window kind of opens up a little bit more and it might be their time, but they gotta, I just think throwing that out there is a little harsh. Now, if Phoenix did that, I'd be like, all right, cause y'all been there. You know what I mean?
Been there. But Chris Paul's 37. I get it with that. Even I still think it's crazy to say it publicly, but I would under, you're right. Like with Phoenix, I would understand it a lot more.
I think he's talking to an audience of one here. There's this dude riding on his little horse out in Serbia. They got, you know, Kroenke sends out somebody on no little horse holding an iPad, just be like, hey, Nikola, just sign this contract right here. Just sign this little supermax right here. And he goes like, are we championship or bust or are we second round or bust? Let me know. So yeah. I think that's what that move is.
Yeah. I mean, I look at it. I'm like, all right, you're not better than the Suns. You're not better than the Warriors. You're not better than the Grizzlies. I'm not even convinced you're better than the Mavericks. I'm not trying to overreact to their conference finals work, but like if you look at the Mavericks, you feel like the Nuggets at full health are way ahead of them. Like they're probably better, but also
healthy
like
Clippers.
Get Kawhi back in the mix, right? Like that's I didn't even think of that. Again, this is this Nuggets team is really good, but the Jazz were really good. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think there's a tier, like I think they're like more tier two, tier three in the West than like, yeah, championship or bust. Like it's crazy to me to go out there and say that publicly. And I think that does the Nuggets a huge disservice as a group of players. Like I can't believe you said that. One more thing before we get out of here. James, there is, speaking of Phoenix, I get to use this word. I love this word. There's some scuttlebutt around the NBA that DeAndre Ayton, this thing has gotten to a point where like maybe he's not coming back to Phoenix, even though he's a restricted free agent.
Yeah. It's me and Hollinger did a piece that's up on The Athletic now, which is Piston centric regarding Ayton. And in that piece, and I said something like, I've heard that it's unlikely, but Hollinger said it's more likely than not that he plays for somebody else next season. And I think that's kind of the direction that it's been trending toward. I don't know if it's been said like that yet. So it's making its rounds. I mean, it makes sense. It feels like Ayton, there is some turmoil there. I don't know if it dates back to not getting the extension. Obviously there's stuff there with him and Monty. Things aren't great, even though the team has had success. I think he goes somewhere. My favorite as a basketball fan, my favorite DeAndre Ayton destination is in Hollinger touched on the piece, a Jakob Poeltl, Keldon Johnson ish trade for Ayton. And then the Spurs go sign LaVine.
Oh,
that would be fun.
Yeah.
Murray, LaVine, fun. And Ayton.
I mean, I love DeJounte Murray, so I'm in on any getting him any talent to play with. Also, like,
he's from Seattle, right?
Zach LaVine is from Seattle. Yeah.
Is Murray too, though?
Murray is from Seattle. Yep.
Yeah. Let's see.
DeAndre Ayton, not from Seattle, but I'm sure he's been there and finds it lovely.
He likes brunch, though.
Yeah, exactly. That I like that idea. Also, I don't hate the idea of like Jakob Poeltl being the guy that replaces Ayton. Like that's not a sexy name at all, but like he's a good defender. Like he's a good guy around the basket on both ends of the floor. Like that's not a bad
low maintenance.
Yeah, super low maintenance. Keldon Johnson would look great on that Suns team too. Like another just 6'8" wing who can do everything.
Yep.
I like that.
Playing the fourth quarter of the last game of the season, like he'll do all sorts of things for you.
He'll do, he'll sub in when you ask him to sub in. It's, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that can happen there. That's interesting. That's a really interesting idea. I don't know if I want to see Zach leave the Bulls, but him under Pop would be interesting. I wonder what Pop could unlock there.
Let Pop run out in the sunset, and then Quinn Snyder walks right in.
Quinn Snyder rolls in, and then they just start hating each other. A couple years from now, they break it up and everything, and we're wondering why doesn't DeAndre Ayton get more screen assists. And now we've come full circle to the three screen assists that Draymond Green had at the beginning of this episode. Make sure you check out all the other pods on The Athletic. You know the deal. Rate, subscribe, do all that crap. Make sure you're following The Athletic, you're subscribed to The Athletic. The best coverage of sports on the internet. For Trey, for Jared, for James, I'm Zach. You want to keep it locked in on The Athletic NBA Show podcast.
They sit at the same table when they eat sometimes. You know, I don't know if they ride to practice together.